You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grevet.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grevet. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a healthy, sustainable world. A world where our food is free of GMOs and harmful chemicals. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Our website is foodintegritynow.org, and you can also find us on Facebook at Food Integrity Now and on Twitter, and we also have a YouTube channel. We appreciate you listening today. My guest today is Dr. Stephanie Seneff. Dr. Seneff is a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. She has a bachelor's degree from MIT in biology with a minor in food and nutrition and a PhD in electrical engineering and computer science, also from MIT. She is an author of more than 150 peer-reviewed journal and conference proceeding papers. Her research over the last several years has focused on understanding the effects of certain environmental toxicants, such as aluminum and glyphosate, on human physiology. Dr. Seneff, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
I'm delighted to be here.
I am.
Thank you.
So excited to talk with you today and learn a lot from you. We've been hearing more and more information about glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. And we're now not only finding it in our soil, water, blood, gut, urine, but in human breast milk. We know that Roundup is the most widely used herbicide in the world, and that glyphosate is a mineral chelator and a patented antibiotic. Today, I'd like to talk with you about some of your finding as to the synergistic role of aluminum in glyphosate and what this has to do with autism. You stated that you predict by 2025, half the kids born will be diagnosed with autism. I find that staggering. Let's start out with, how does glyphosate biologically work?
It's fascinating, actually. And of course, the main thing that they advertise is that it disrupts the shikimate pathway in plants. And that's a pathway that's extremely important to the plants because it produces a set of amino acids called the aromatic amino acids that are essential for the plant's function. It actually also does lots of other things, but they kind of downplay those things because they like the story that we don't have the shikimate pathway in our cells, and therefore humans are immune to glyphosate, basically. That's their argument, that it doesn't hurt us because we don't have that pathway. What they majorly overlook is that all of our bacteria, our gut bacteria, do have this pathway, and they require it to produce many nutrients that are absolutely essential to us, which we can't produce ourselves precisely because we don't have that pathway.
So what does the glyphosate do in the gut?
Right, so it disrupts the gut bacteria and it preferentially kills the good guys, basically, so the pathogens overgrow. Lactobacillus is really important for keeping tamed all the ones that will cause inflammation, leaky gut, all those nasty things that are now becoming epidemics in our society. When lactobacillus gets harmed by glyphosate, these other bugs overgrow, and then we get leaky gut, we get, you know, gluten intolerance and all these different food allergies and whatnot. And, of course, also there's a direct connection between the gut and the brain, which is becoming very clear. And the gut bacteria, in fact, communicate to the brain when they're under stress, and this causes reactions in the brain that can lead to things like autism.
Wow. And so how does the chelation process work with the glyphosate?
Well, actually, there's papers that claim that the chelation of manganese is likely the reason why the shikimate pathway doesn't work, because the enzyme that's affected depends upon manganese. Manganese turns out to be a very, very interesting micronutrient that's been overlooked. You know, people don't really think about, oh, what are good food sources of manganese? They don't think about manganese deficiency. But glyphosate prevents the lactobacillus from getting out the manganese that they need to stay healthy. And when lactobacillus is reduced, you get a direct result of anxiety. Anxiety is linked to insufficient lactobacillus, And lactobacillus probiotics can fix anxiety. This has been shown in human studies. So it's really interesting that that connection is very strong. And that gets you pretty far, because now you've got the problem of the overgrowth of the pathogens that lactobacillus is unable to keep in control, you know.
Right.
And it goes from there.
We know that glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, but Roundup also has adjuvants. And
right.
Can you explain what that means and how that works?
Yes, and in fact, the adjuvants, people have been doing studies to show that these adjuvants that are added to these herbicides and also insecticides actually make the active ingredient far, far, far more toxic than it would otherwise be, even up to 1,000 times more toxic. And this is because the adjuvants, they're supposedly inert, and the government doesn't even study them to see what they do. I mean, the industry has basically said that they're inert, but that is absolutely not true, because these adjuvants, it's sort of like soap. I mean, it makes the it allows the active ingredient to get into the cells. Otherwise, it would just stay out. And so once glyphosate gets into the cell, it's a train wreck. Without the adjuvants, it's much harder for it to get in. So they add the adjuvants on purpose to make the Roundup work better on the plants, and indeed, it makes it work much better. But of course, it also works better on our gut bacteria, and it causes increased harm to ourselves, to our own cells as well, because of that.
Right, and glyphosate is a systemic pesticide.
Right, it kills all plants, which is pretty amazing, except for a very interesting exception, which is the plants that have been engineered to be Roundup ready. This is actually very crucial, because we've had a, you know, you might call it a wonderful solution in a demonic way. In agriculture that has come about over the past 15 years or so with the introduction of this bacterial gene that's inserted into the plant's genome. And the bacterial gene affords the plant protection from glyphosate. It's quite remarkable because it kills all plants with the exception of these engineered plants that have this bacterial gene. Those plants don't die. And so these are, in fact, corn, soy, alfalfa, canola oil, sugar beets, cotton, tobacco, and I think that's about it. Might have forgotten something there, but it's a pretty big list because each of those crops is a pretty huge crop. And corn and soy and canola oil and sugar beets are basically the core of the processed food industry. And so you spray the glyphosate. They can spray the glyphosate from the airplane directly onto the crop without worrying about the crop dying because of this bacterial gene that the crop has. And the direct consequence has been an increase in the use of glyphosate on these crops, exactly in step with the increased adoption of this GMO Roundup Ready gene. It's quite remarkable. You can see that from the data that are provided by the U.S. government.
And I think what you're talking about really makes it important for people to understand the Seralini study, because his study was not just on glyphosate, it was on Roundup. Do you want to talk briefly about that?
Yes, very interesting study. I was extremely excited to see this study, and it was very timely for me because I was beginning to think maybe glyphosate was connected to autism because I was seeing some clear connections in terms of physiology. And this study just totally made me convinced that I needed to pursue this with a vengeance. And this is the only study, really, that has been published that looks at Roundup toxicity over the entire lifespan of the animal. These were rats. And they were fed, you know, food. They weren't. It wasn't like one of these cases where they were overdosed with. Sometimes the experiments have excess amounts, and therefore they can be discredited. But this one was just feeding them these normal feed, which was Roundup Ready, exposed to Roundup, and GMO, of course, and also BT. I guess they had the BT corn in there as well. So you don't know exactly which of these various BT is an insecticide that's produced by the corn crop. And it blows up the stomach of the bugs. And that one is also, I'm sure, not good for us, you know, but I haven't studied that one in depth.
It's registered at the EPA as a insecticide, the BT corn
right.
is. So that's,
yeah, no.
that kind of says it
right.
all right there. But go ahead.
I know. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, that you'd want to eat an insecticide that's built into every genome of the plant that you're eating, you know. Sounds pretty horrible to me. But nonetheless, the Roundup was part of the issue. And, of course, they didn't tease it all out. But what they did show was that the rats that were fed this toxic food compared to the organic-fed rats And the interesting thing is they didn't see any evidence of harm at the end of 3 months. This is very significant because 3 months is considered to be the outer limit of how long you need to do these studies in order to show toxicity. So the really big problem with glyphosate is that it came under the radar screen because it takes it a while for the toxicity to show up. It's basically eroding your health bit by bit, and at some point you get over a threshold and you start to get sick. So by 4 months they started to see toxicity. But all the studies that the industry has done are stopped at 3 months. So this is very significant. And also the industry usually only studies the active ingredient without the adjuvants, which of course, as you've seen, makes it much more toxic than it would otherwise be. So these two factors have led the EPA to allow this toxic chemical in our food chain without monitoring and without consideration, because they've become convinced that it's harmless, and it's not true. So we're in a very, very bad situation with this chemical. Cerulean showed massive mammary tumors in the female rats, and severe liver and kidney damage in the male rats, and shortened lifespan for all the rats that were exposed to these toxic foods as compared to the organic fed rats.
Yes, and I'm sure many of our listeners may have seen this study on the internet. It's my understanding it was the most widely viewed study ever.
Wow.
Because those pictures were so graphic. I actually interviewed Professor Cerulini on the program, and he's going to be speaking in Broomfield, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver, in 2 weeks. So that'll be interesting to go hear him.
Wonderful.
Go hear him. He's speaking at the Seeds of Doubt conference there. So let's move on to glyphosate and aluminum. And can you share with our listeners some of your findings?
Remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And in fact, aluminum was the chemical that I had identified first. I've been studying autism now for about 8 years intensely. A very complex disease, and I had certainly identified aluminum as a contributing factor. There's a lot of papers, actually, that are linking aluminum to autism, and it's pretty clear that it's one of the chemicals in our environment that's causative. But what had frustrated me up until the point when I discovered glyphosate was this whole issue of the gut disruption, which I couldn't explain with the aluminum, but I can very nicely explain now that I have the glyphosate. And the interesting thing is that glyphosate chelates aluminum. So aluminum has a +3 charge, and that actually keeps it from getting through the gut wall. It's very hard for this highly positive charged ion to get through. But what glyphosate does is it forms a cage around the aluminum and hides the +3 charge so that it becomes a neutral molecule that can then, it's a small molecule too, so that it can very easily cross the gut barrier, especially when the gut is leaky. And of course, glyphosate makes the gut leaky, so that's like a perfect storm to allow dietary aluminum to get in. So especially if you have gut problems, you might be taking antacids. Those often contain aluminum. This is setting you up for a direct delivery of aluminum to the brain, because the glyphosate will carry the aluminum in this uncharged form. And then when it gets into the terminal watershed of the pineal gland, it'll let the aluminum loose, because now it's in an acidic environment, and that's where the two parts separate. And both the glyphosate and the aluminum will then become very, very toxic once they're separated. So it's like a Trojan horse to get the aluminum into the brain. And then once the pineal gland is exposed to aluminum and glyphosate, it becomes dysfunctional. The pineal gland produces melatonin, and melatonin, of course, is what controls the wake-sleep cycle. And sleep disorder is a huge problem these days. It's going up in step with glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops in the country, according to online data available from the U.S. government. And insomnia is associated with all of these neurological diseases like autism and ADHD and Alzheimer's, dementia, schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis. All of these are associated with insomnia. So I think this issue with the melatonin is really, really important. If you can't sleep, what people are realizing only recently is that one of the important things that sleep does is to get rid of the garbage. So as your cells are living, they build up garbage just as we do when we're living. And if they can't throw their garbage away, it's going to pile up and then eventually become so much in the way that they can't function anymore. So you need the sleep to clear the garbage. You need the melatonin to induce the sleep. and you can't get the melatonin because the pineal gland is destroyed by the aluminum and the glyphosate. Worse than that, melatonin is derived from the shikimate pathway. So the melatonin is a product of tryptophan, which is a direct product of the shikimate pathway, which glyphosate disrupts. So you've got trouble with the pineal gland left and right because of the glyphosate and the connection of the glyphosate with the aluminum.
Wow, that's fascinating. So does it actually calcify the pineal gland? Is that
Yes, it does. Okay. That's right. And of course, calcification of the pineal gland is associated with Alzheimer's disease. And that calcium and aluminum are very similar. So it's both calcification and what I would call aluminification, because aluminum behaves a lot like calcium in the pineal gland to cause a similar problem, only worse, only, you know, more in a higher degree.
So you're in essence saying that glyphosate makes aluminum more toxic than it would otherwise
be. Right, exactly. And it's not just because it lets it through. Another issue is picresol, which is a toxic phenol that's produced by these gut bacteria like C. difficile that overgrow in the context of glyphosate. That's been shown in chicken studies. And C. difficile is becoming a monster in the hospitals today. Lots of people are getting infections that can't be cured with antibiotics. It produces this picresol, which actually enhances the uptake of aluminum by the cells. So that's another factor that's entering in there.
Okay, so let's talk about glyphosate and mercury.
Yes, that's an issue too. And in fact, again, the gut bacteria can actually detoxify mercury. They do so many things for us. We're only beginning to realize all the things that the gut bacteria do for us. We really should treasure them. We should treat them very well. And so when they get disrupted, the mercury becomes more toxic. Mercury also depletes glutathione in the liver. Glutathione is a really important antioxidant in the liver that will keep it healthy. And glyphosate also depletes glutathione, so they're working synergistically to lower the glutathione levels. Low glutathione is associated with autism. It's a very strong risk factor in autism. And it also then will cause liver damage, which is, I think, a major starting point for the rest of the disease cascade that follows once you've been chronically exposed to glyphosate for some period of time.
So the glyphosate makes mercury more toxic than it would otherwise be.
Right.
And that brings me to the question about vaccines. What is it, 50% of vaccines have mercury?
Is that right? I'm surprised by that number. I would think it's less. My understanding is that they've taken a lot of the mercury out right before the turn of the century, around 2000. And, of course, then they claimed that mercury doesn't cause autism because they saw that the autism rates continued to rise after they took the mercury out. That's been sort of a major simplistic explanation of the idea that mercury doesn't cause autism. This is completely fallacious because what they also did at the same time was to increase the amount of aluminum in the vaccines. I have extensively studied aluminum in vaccines. That's where I started with my autism studies. And it's very strong correlations between the total aluminum burden of the vaccines in the VARS database, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is maintained by the U.S. government. Wonderful database, which has a wealth of information in it. I've looked at it every which way. But you can see very strong correlations, actually, between the total burden of aluminum and mercury in those events, in the events over time. You get a curve for the VARS database, and you can compare that to a curve over time of mentions of autism, pervasive developmental delay, PDD, and anxiety. And when you do that, you find very strong correlations between those two curves with a very, very sharp rise right after the year 2000. That is, there was an increase in the amount of aluminum in the vaccine requirements. And then on top of that, of course, there was a growing exposure to glyphosate at that same time, working synergistically to make the aluminum more toxic, which caused a lot more reports of vaccine adverse reactions related to aluminum in conjunction with these childhood problems, anxiety, autism, and pervasive developmental delay. These all line up. And, of course, mercury actually is present in many of the flu vaccines. I've heard about half. It's a preservative.
Yeah, maybe that's where I got that number from. It's 50% of the flu vaccines.
which is very scary because these days they are encouraging everybody and their uncle to get a flu vaccine. I find this very, very disturbing. They are encouraging pregnant women to get a flu vaccine, which is absolutely shocking to me because that's going to introduce mercury to the fetus, which is extremely scary. And I am just incomprehensible. You know, it's unfathomable to me why they would want to do this, you know, and why they couldn't see that this is a very bad idea. And I can tell you that flu is becoming more and more toxic. You know, flu itself is becoming much worse than it used to be. More people are getting it, more people are getting more sick with it and all of these things. And I think that's a direct consequence of a weakened immune system because of the chronic exposure to glyphosate.
Right. I would have to agree with you on that. And I always tell people, instead of getting a flu shot, just work on building your immune system and eating organic and just building your immune system as the key way to fight off the flu.
Right. And I would say, by the way, in particular, getting outside and getting sunlight exposure, this is another thing that I'm very upset about. We have an enormous vitamin D deficiency problem right now in this country and growing. It's amazing how this just kind of appeared over the last few years, maybe the last 5 or 6 years. And I think this is directly due to the glyphosate, because the glyphosate disrupts the CYP enzymes in the liver, and the CYP enzymes are required to activate vitamin D. So this makes very good sense to me. The sad thing is that what they do is they give people high doses of vitamin D orally, and they tell them to stay out of the sun. And I think this is extremely bad advice. And my recommendation is to get out in the sun as much as you can without sunscreen. And this will really boost your immune system tremendously, whereas taking vitamin D supplements will not do the same thing, because the sun has a much bigger effect than just the production of the vitamin D.
Right, and the sunscreen, that's an important issue too, because most sunscreen, mainstream sunscreen, carries aluminum.
I know. It's just like so ironic, because I've actually identified aluminum as being toxic to the enzyme in the skin that makes sulfate. Sulfate is my area of expertise, and I think sulfate synthesis in the skin is impaired both by glyphosate and by aluminum. And the aluminum is in the sunscreen, the glyphosate is in the food. And when you can't make sulfate in the skin, the sun can become toxic. So it's extremely disturbing, the whole situation that you get into, where you can't afford to be in the sun because your enzymes aren't working. But those enzymes are absolutely essential. They're product sulfate to maintain the health of your blood. And so people really get into a downward spiral in this circumstance. And the only way to get out of it is to, and I don't know to what extent this enzyme can heal once you remove the source of the chronic source of the aluminum and the glyphosate, but certainly going to an organic diet, stopping using the aluminum-containing sunscreen, and getting yourself out in the sun for as much as you can without getting, you know, burned and without seeing a toxic reaction of some sort, absolutely essential to get back to a state of health.
So what does sulfate deficiency have to do with autism? It's my understanding that many neurological diseases have a common theme of insufficient sulfate to the brain. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I have become pretty much convinced that sulfate deficiency is a key component of all of these neurological diseases. And it's really interesting. One of the things is that melatonin actually transports sulfate into the brain via the cerebral spinal fluid. Most of the melatonin that's in the cerebral spinal fluid is sulfated. And sulfate is needed to take out the garbage. Remember, I mentioned that the garbage builds up. So when you don't have enough sulfate, you can't clear the garbage. And again, then your neurons will get sick because they're so loaded up with garbage that they can't function anymore. Sulfate also in the blood is incredibly important. For example, it in the LDL particles, which are the good, the bad guy cholesterol. You know, they talk about
right.
LDL and HDL. Yeah, LDL is supposed to be the bad guy cholesterol. These are particles, lipid particles, and they depend upon sulfate, cholesterol sulfate in particular, in their membrane, which makes them water soluble. So it allows them to, it gives them a much safer transport in the blood, because it builds a jello-like barrier around the lipid particle, which protects it from damage from sugar and from oxygen. So once it doesn't have enough sulfate, then it can become damaged, and once it becomes damaged, you get heart disease. So this is also directly linked to cardiovascular disease, is because of the lack of sulfate. Sulfate in the red blood cells also keeps them from coagulating, so you can get into problems with blood clots if you don't have enough sulfate. And also the sulfate gives them negative charge, which is what propels them through the blood. So when they don't have enough sulfate, they become sluggish, the blood flow becomes sluggish, the heart has to pump harder, and you can get into heart failure. So there's all kinds of problems with insufficient sulfate in the blood. The red blood cells produce sulfate in response to sunlight, and this is why you need the sunlight exposure, not for the vitamin D, but for the sulfate. The vitamin D is a signaling molecule that's telling your body that you've got sulfate, but it's lying if you take it orally and don't do the skin exposure. You're lying about the availability of sulfate to your cells, and this will cause them to behave recklessly, which will take you down a path of even worse health in the long run. Initially, you may feel better because your cells are being fooled into thinking that everything's okay when it's not.
Have there been any studies done about certain areas of this country where there's more sunlight and as far as sulfates go?
Well, certainly sunlight. So sunlight is very highly correlated with, inverse correlated with heart disease. There's a study that showed across the world looking at the amount of sun exposure in different regions geographically and the amount of heart disease that these regions had. Complete linear relationship, inverse linear relationship. The higher the sunlight, you know, the more sunlight availability, the less heart disease. Very clear inverse relationship there. Autism is very strongly linked to sunlight exposure. I've looked at data, and you can get data on the web from the U.S. government on a state-by-state basis, and you can look at latitude. So high latitude has increased autism. You can look at number of sunny days. High number of sunny days protects from autism. You can look at total rainfall. Again, that's correlated with autism. And then you have temperature, which is also correlated. Low temperature is correlated with autism. So all of these are indicators of insufficient sunlight to be connected with autism. And, of course, autism is also associated with vitamin D deficiency.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And glyphosate suppresses the activation of vitamin D in the liver.
That's right. Which I think is what's caused the epidemic that we're seeing in vitamin D deficiency.
Okay, just so our listeners are clear, we're talking about glyphosate because if you are eating GMO foods, which are, 80 to 90% of the food in our mainstream grocery stores, you are getting a daily dose of glyphosate in your body. And that's why we're talking about this. It's not just some random herbicide. It's everywhere right now.
Yeah, it's been used a huge amount on the crops in the U.S. We actually consume 25% of the world's market of glyphosate. So we are superstars with respect to glyphosate consumption in this country, which is really scary. And I think that's why we have the highest by far medical costs in this country. You know, we all talk about how expensive medical treatment is in this country, and it's because we're sick, and we're sick because of glyphosate. And so the most important thing anybody can do to improve their health is to do a strict organic diet. It's not enough, actually, to just avoid GMOs because they also spray glyphosate on crops that are not GMO right before the harvest. This is done to sugarcane. It's done to wheat. I mean, these are major crops. So bread, for example, and sugar, of course, is everywhere, are derived from these crops that are sprayed with Roundup just a few days before the harvest, intentionally in order to kill the crops. This was something I only learned fairly recently, and I was really shocked when I discovered this. I think it explains gluten intolerance and celiac disease. We've got an epidemic in those showing up in the last few years. All of a sudden, all the grocery stores are offering gluten-free sections because everybody is getting allergic to wheat. And wheat used to be a staple crop. It's the staff of life. Wheat is not an unhealthy food. But when it's combined with glyphosate, it becomes toxic, and the body reacts to it by producing these antibodies that then make you very sick with celiac disease. And so you have to eat organic wheat products. Anything that you eat that contains wheat has to be organic. Pretty much you need to go 100% organic to be safe, and that's what we've done. My husband and I only buy organic foods now when we go to the supermarket.
Right. Well said. And the reason it is sprayed on so many of those crops, it's like you said, it's sprayed and it's used as a drying agent or a ripening agent. So they want to speed up the ripening process. So they just douse it with glyphosate. You're not only getting the glyphosate in all the GMO foods, but you're getting it in conventionally grown food too. That is not organic.
That's right. And another thing that's really scary recently is that they're getting, part of the reason why the use of glyphosate has been going up and up is because the weeds are smart. I mean, these our enemies can always outsmart us, and what they do is they become Roundup ready themselves. So the weeds become glyphosate resistant, and they're having a huge problem right now in the Roundup ready fields with glyphosate resistant weeds. That's why their use of glyphosate has gone up and up. And now they're saying, well, we can't even handle these weeds with glyphosate anymore. We need to add 2,4-D. So now they're designing 2,4-D-ready crops, which means a genetic mutation, inserted bacterial gene that affords the corn protection from both glyphosate and 2,4-D. 2,4-D is a component of Agent Orange, which was what was used as an anti-warfare in the Vietnam War. It is a really toxic chemical. They even admit that. I mean, they know it's toxic. They don't care. The government is still willing to allow this to happen. So now you're going to be getting both 2,4-D and Roundup on your dinner plate if you don't go organic. So I would urge everybody to just stop buying this toxic food. If we can vote with our pocketbooks, the farmers will respond by growing the kind of food we want.
Exactly. And on that note about the 2,4-D and glyphosate duo, it's called Enlist Duo. You can go to Food Integrity Now's Facebook page and you will see a petition on there that Dr. Oz has started to petition the President of the United States to intervene because it was just recently approved. And we need 100,000 signatures, and I think we're close to 70,000 signatures right now. And that would, once you get 100,000, the president has to respond. So, you know, if nothing else, this will really raise awareness as to what is happening, and so people can really avoid these products by eating 100% organic.
Right. Thank you for that. That's very important, and I hope all the listeners will go off and sign that petition. Very important.
Yeah. So let's go back to aluminum for a little bit here. You say aluminum, a well-documented neurotoxin, is the established cause of dialysis dementia. And you say that you propose that aluminum accumulation in the brain, synergistically promoted by glyphosate, is the principal cause of autism in the U.S.
Yes.
That's a powerful statement. And I know you talked about that briefly in the beginning, but can you just expand on that just a little bit further?
Well, yes. Well, aluminum is a very well-established neurotoxin. And in fact, there have been several papers, many papers written specifically on the link between aluminum and autism, and even on aluminum and autism in vaccines. Chris Shaw is an important author of some of these papers, and I've written some myself with various collaborators. I saw the link in the VARS database I mentioned earlier, very strong connections. I looked at symptoms in VARS. So VARS is this vaccine adverse event reporting system, and I looked at after 2000 versus before 2000 in VARS, and looked specifically at aluminum-containing vaccines versus non-aluminum-containing vaccines. And you find, first of all, that the same symptoms that occur more frequently after 2000 are exactly the same as the symptoms that occur more frequently in the aluminum-containing vaccines over the whole database. So this is sort of saying that those are symptoms that are occurring more after 2000 are linked to aluminum. And then, furthermore, you can see the tie-in with the aluminum and the autism. For example, anemia. So aluminum is known to cause anemia because it displaces iron in heme. And heme is, of course, in hemoglobin, which is what the red blood cells use to carry oxygen. And so there's a oxygen deficiency that develops when the red blood cells get destroyed by the aluminum because of this displacement of the iron. And So oxygen deficiency leads to hypoxia, which leads to a reaction in the brain of called encephalopathy, and that's basically a response to the lack of oxygen. The brain implements a program that's going to work better in a environment where there isn't enough oxygen, but that program is very subpar and can lead to damage to the neurons. So that's another pathway by which the aluminum is going to cause problems in the brain. The aluminum also goes directly into the brain and disrupts the signaling in the neurons. It also disrupts sulfate synthesis because of its effect on calcium imports. There's a whole bunch of it's complicated that I've written about. You can read my papers if you want.
Can they go to look for those papers, Dr. Senna?
So I have a webpage at MIT. It's called, it's not easy to remember, but it's people, P-E-O-P-L-E dot CSAIL dot MIT dot EDU slash Senneff, S-E-N-E-F-F. And on that, at the top of that webpage, I have a whole bunch of peer-reviewed published journal articles. And further down, I have various slideshows, various talks that I've given, and a few essays that I've written. So there's a bunch of material on that webpage. You can also just Google my name and you'll find various interviews with, for example, Jeffrey Smith or Dr. Mercola, and various radio interviews like this one, podcasts and things of that. So a lot of material that you can find if you just Google my name.
And we will post this website on the show page for this podcast so that people can link right to it.
Great.
Okay, great. So this may be an obvious question, but it's not to me, so I'm going to ask it. Why do they use aluminum in vaccines?
It's a good question to ask, and it turns out that aluminum is an excellent agent. It's like an adjuvant. It's called an adjuvant, just like for glyphosate. Just like the adjuvants in Roundup make glyphosate more toxic, aluminum in vaccines makes the vaccine more likely to take. That means that the immune reaction is stronger. So because the aluminum is so toxic, the aluminum in combination with the antigen that's in the vaccine stimulates the immune system to respond more aggressively to the vaccine, which will make them more likely to build these permanent antibodies that you need in order to get the immunity. So without the aluminum, the vaccine won't work as well in terms of preventing the disease. So they're really caught between a rock and a hard place, because if they take the aluminum out, the only solution would be to add more of the antigen, a lot more, which would then make the antigen more toxic. So they're, you know, it's very difficult to design a vaccine that isn't going to cause health problems. This is a dirty little secret of the vaccine industry that they're not willing to admit, that it's, I would say, impossible to produce a vaccine that works with 100% effectiveness in the disease that it's trying to prevent without at the same time making the vaccine toxic. And so you are taking a very big risk when you get any vaccine that you might be one of those people who has an intense reaction to that vaccine that takes you to a place where you will never regain your health. And to me, that is really scary, you know? And I personally would rather take my chances on getting a disease that I'm not likely to get anyway. When you think about diseases like polio and smallpox that just about don't exist anymore, you know, we've become very We've really become very terrified of these diseases. I mean, especially even measles and mumps and chickenpox, which when I was a kid, people just got those diseases and it was no big deal, you know. Today, we feel like we have to get all these vaccines to make sure that we won't get these childhood illnesses. And then instead, we've got these flu epidemics. We've got this new problem with this lung infection that's been coming out of the Midwest. We've got Ebola coming on down the pike. You know, it's just like you push it in here, you push it out there. It's not like you can avoid disease, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You just prevent one and cause another. You cause another one to grow. Even the flu vaccine is causing other respiratory infections that might even be worse than the flu that are caused, for example, by syncytial virus. So you're getting flu-like symptoms from things that aren't flu, because you've gotten your flu vaccine that prevents the flu from happening. So you're not really solving your problem. You're just pushing it around. And in the meantime, you're filling yourself up with toxic chemicals like aluminum, also mercury and glutamate, and, I mean, all these things, formaldehyde that they're putting into the vaccines are scary, you know, and you don't really want to risk that, in my opinion. I think we need to really re-examine the risk-benefit ratio of vaccines in a serious way. It's not something that we're allowed to do because the government is so sure that the vaccine program has to be the way it is today, and they keep on adding more, such as the Gardasil vaccine, which I am very upset with. Gardasil is a very dangerous vaccine that they're giving to children, you know, 13-year-old girls and even boys, supposedly to protect them from cervical cancer some 50, 60 years later. They don't even know if it actually protects them. But they do know that Gardasil is a very dangerous vaccine. And I've looked at Gardasil compared to age-matched other vaccines. It has a scary set of symptoms that are occurring much more frequently with the Gardasil vaccine than with the other vaccines that these kids are getting.
Why do you think the government are pushing these vaccines?
I wish I knew. I mean, I do not understand the U.S. government, to be quite frank with you. I mean, I realize there's money behind it. Vaccines are making a lot of money for the companies. The government is under a tremendous influence from the chemical companies. Apparently, the government officials can be bought. I mean, I don't want to believe that, but this is the only explanation I can get for the persistent obtuseness of government officials in their unwillingness to face up to the situation that we're in.
Well, just the approval example would be the approval of the Enlist Duo, the 2,4-D and glyphosate. I mean, that's a perfect example of the ineptness of, you know, some of our government agencies, and done shows about that. I'm not going to go into all that, but also it's so disturbing because when I was being vaccinated as a child, which I was, there were way less vaccinations than those that are required now.
Right.
There's so many more. And I think, right. I think this is an issue too, is that there's more toxins and they're giving more vaccinations.
Right. And the other thing, of course, is that when you are low in vitamin D, the aluminum tends to go into the tissues instead of being exported through the urine. And so the glyphosate is, of course, lowering the vitamin D. And so the aluminum will accumulate, starting from at birth when you get the hepatitis B vaccine, which contains high doses of aluminum at birth. I mean, I just cannot fathom why they think that's a good idea. And they've even shown, studies have shown that hepatitis B is linked to, hepatitis B vaccine is linked to autism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yet the government seems to turn a blind eye. I mean, I don't get it, really. I am absolutely flabbergasted because I cannot understand. I mean, I always thought the U.S. government, you know, that we have a great country and we have a good democracy and all this stuff, but I don't understand what's happening right now, to be frank.
Yeah. How do your colleagues feel about the work you're doing right now? Is there any disputing of your information?
Yeah, well, as you know, if you search my name, you will find articles trying to discredit my work. And I think these articles are put out by people who are being encouraged by the chemical industry to try.
Right.
I mean, that's what happens to people who talk about the kinds of things I'm talking about. I expected that to happen, and I'm glad in a way because it's an indication that they're noticing what I'm saying. My people at MIT have been incredibly supportive of my work. I mean, my boss, the head of CSAIL, the lab, is very supportive. The people who fund me are very supportive. It has been a great pleasure to work at MIT, and fortunately MIT has no funding from Monsanto, and so far MIT has not given me any flack about what I'm doing. Individuals have various opinions about whether what I'm saying is true or not, but I have had tremendous support, both from my funding agency and from MIT itself.
Wonderful. That's really good to know about MIT, too. They haven't been bought,
right?
Because I feel like a lot of the universities have.
I know. Well, that's the problem with all the farm-based universities. All of them are highly funded by the chemical industry, and therefore they're basically gagged. I mean, I think the people who could do the research that would prove some of this stuff can't do it because of the funding sources, I think, which is really criminal, and it's very, very much a shame.
Yeah. Well, look at Professor Tyrone Hayes and backlash that he has endured from Syngenta trying to discredit him. But you know what? He has prevailed.
I know. I love him. I think he's so great. I've heard him talk, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And I'm so honored to I'm so pleased. I mean, there's a growing list of people whom I admire greatly. Of course, Don Huber is one I should mention also.
Yeah.
He was the one who turned me on to glyphosate, and I really was struggling to figure out what was going on with autism. I was so determined to find. I knew there had to be something big in the environment that was causing it, and I was frustrated that I couldn't find it. And no one thinks of Roundup because it's considered to be harmless. I didn't think of it. I wouldn't have thought of it, except for the fact that I got to hear Don Huber speak. And that really changed my life, you know. And yeah. Since then, I've just devoted all of my effort towards trying to get this message out.
Yeah, I interviewed Dr. Huber in April, and that was the most widely listened to show that I've ever done. And he just, to me, is indisputable. He's
right, exactly.
He's such a intelligent man, and he has done his research, and he's very credible. So if you would like to listen to that show, just go to the website and look for that show. Thank you, Dr. Senna, for all this wonderful information and for all the research you're doing that clearly shows that glyphosate isn't in our bodies, it's in the environment, and that it's a huge issue. And I know as time goes by, we're going to be finding out more and more about this toxic chemical, and we need to raise awareness to the level that we can eventually get it banned. And
right, or at least get people to buy only organic, which would almost be the same thing. I really believe in a grassroots effort.
Yes, yes.
And certainly economical considerations work really well in this country.
Yes, they do. So thank you again for being a guest on our show. And this has been just tremendous information, and we'll continue to follow your work. And thank you to our listeners. We'll be back next week with another great show.